So, David, for everybody out there who doesn't know you, please briefly introduce yourself. What do you do and how have you started?
Well, I do coaching training, run a company, and we're now developing a training program that's global about the best practices about how you get things done with the least amount of effort, how you keep your head clear, how you create space for yourself amidst a world that's changing rapidly and full of chaos and full of a lot of stuff. So we help people surf on top of that and then be able to sort of move themselves to another level of game about how you play with all that. So that's what I do, and that's, a lot of what I'm still doing. And I'm 70 years old, but and it took me actually 25 years to actually figure out what I'd figured out. So that after thousands and thousands, literally thousands of hours spent desk side with some of the busiest and brightest and sharpest people on the planet, actually coaching them through this methodology and watching how profound the changes were that had happened, I decided I better write the manual. It took me that long to actually figure out that I'd figured out something that nobody else had figured out, that it was unique and that it was bulletproof. You couldn't punch a hole in it. And so I decided to write the manual. So that's when I wrote the book, Getting Things Done, got published in 2001, which was just, 25 years of my experience then put into a manual so that anybody who wanted to dig into it and find out what it was, at that point I figured, well, if I got run over by a bus, somebody would at some point figure this out. But meanwhile, let me put it in a book out there so that then if somebody is interested, they could find out how to surf on top of this game.
Exactly. So GTD is getting things done. It's your methodology. And we won't talk about the details of the methodology because everyone can read it out of your books. But I would rather focus on the process, that was before the book. So how really did you make the GTD? I mean, what was your way of thinking? How have you started?
There was no big strategic plan, believe me. And my hell, I didn't wake up one morning and go, wow, GTD. It's a long string of, as I say, epiphanies, tiny little ahas about this or that or the other. But I guess the reason I got interested in it and got engaged in that process, there were two primary vectors, I think. One was I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. I was not an aspirational or entrepreneurial person, really. I was more interested in God, truth, the universe, how does it all work out there? I've always been fascinated by the relationship of what you can't see to what you can. Because what you can't see, frankly, has a lot more power than what you can. And I think a lot of what we can see and what's here was simply because of things that go on other levels or access other levels. So I got very fa I've always been fascinated by, if I could get a hold of that, then I'd really be able to make this game work here. I'm just the laziest guy you ever met. So I'm saying, if I could find out where the real source of power is, the real source of how things move, that would be really cool. Then I could make something move across the room without having to get up and make it move. What if I could just imagine it moving? And there it goes. I've always been fascinated by that game. And that took a lot of different forms as I grew up. And again, no major conscious strategy, but those are the things that attracted me. So I wound up going, I wasn't that particularly interested in this world. I was a history major. I was a philosophy and then history major in graduate school. I was in American intellectual history, the history of thought in America. And obviously, only thing I could do then was teach it or be in academia or something like that. And then discovered that I got bored reading about people who seemed to be enlightened, wanted to have my own. So then I jumped out of the academia and decided to go experience my own world of, personal exploration and self-awareness and all that good stuff. And this is, of course, California in the 60s and 70s, so this was heady time for all that kind of stuff. But I had, they weren't paying people to do that, but I had to pay the rent. So I wound up, turned out that I had friends in my network who were starting businesses and entrepreneurs or whatever. So I said, well, let me go help them do what they do. And they pay me to do something to do that. So I became a good number two guy. So, I would come help you do what you were doing. You were the one who were interested in what you were doing, but I would just come in and say, okay, well, how can I help you do what you do? So I, help people start a landscape company and manage, start a restaurant. I help, people create a car restoration business and a gasoline petrol station. you know, I did all kinds of things. Because I would just come in and go, look, well, let's make this easier. So I would look how to improve what they were doing and how they did it. Now they call that process improvement. You know, that's a very sophisticated term. Back then, I just thought, look, then I would improve it. It would get onto cruise control and I got bored. So I'd go leave and go, you know, work with somebody else. Then I discovered they actually pay people to do that, and they call them something. Well, consultant, you know.
Advisor. Oh,
you know, now I are one. Now, you know, 1981, hung out my shingle. David Allen Associates. So that was one vector, was that okay, I decided that in order to make a living in the world, it was kind of cool to be able to have something that would help people if I showed up. Sometimes it was pretty obvious, but I was then hungry for what were some models or some things or approaches that, in case it wasn't real clear, if I could get that person to engage with those, then it would improve their condition no matter what, mm-hmm. right? No matter who they were, how old they were, what business they were in or whatever, because being lazy, I didn't want to have to reinvent it every time I had a new client. So I got hungry to then explore what are those models. Anyway, to make a very, very long story short, I know this is longer than what you ask about, but, you know, basically I started to then gather together these models of things that work for me to help me stay clear, get more in control, more focused on appropriate things, which is really the self-management mm-hmm. Syndrome, which is keep things under control, keep yourself appropriately focused. And then I discovered what I learned for me turned out to work for everybody I was working with. I go, wow, that's interesting. So then I began to cobble together or to both understand and start to bring together into a more whole, holistic model about how one actually, what you have to do to be appropriately engaged with all the things that you are engaged with, so they don't bug you, so they don't pull on you. I guess another vector, very important one too, was that I got sort of attracted to the what I now refer to professionally as the strategic value of clear space. Mm-hmm. How much more critical it is to make good decisions, to be doing the best you can best, you know, and to be as productive as you can be when there's no distraction, there's no residue, there's no garbage essentially in your head.
Exactly.
And so you can be absolutely clear, right?
Yeah.
So I use martial arts images a lot, mind like water. You know, that whole idea of having yourself free to be fully available to whatever you're doing without having that distracted or minimized
switching context.
That's right, by having things pulling at you. So those, all of those sort of came together in this thing. And again, it took me 20, 25 years of spending thousands of hours with some of the best and brightest people working this methodology and watching what happened, you know, to then, you know, come up with, wow, this is a whole unique thing.
So when was the first time you actually thought that this idea of, did you have already a name for it? I mean, GTD? No. So when did you thought that this idea might be useful for more than you? I mean, for other people?
Well, I had a mentor. I didn't make up some of these core elements. A couple of them I learned from a mentor of mine, a great friend now. And he was a very sophisticated and mature, you know, management consultant. As I was beginning my own consulting practice, I met him. He sort of took to me and was willing to give me what he had learned. And just because he did a lot of work in organizational change, mm-hmm. he discovered that what gets in the way a lot is a whole lot of old business, a lot of incomplete things, a lot of open loops that are still left, you know, in people's heads and in the organization. And he found that in order to be able to sort of get clarity about all that, he came up with some techniques, and one of them was to dump everything out of your head that has your attention. So I didn't make that up. He did that with me, and I went, holy mackerel, because I watched how that affected me when I did that. So then when I turned and started to work that with other people, I watched how it affected them, and without exception, that started to produce those kind of results. And I went, wow, that's powerful. So the whole idea that when you make agreements with yourself and those open loops, as we call them, those things are still there and you are not appropriately engaged with making the right decisions about them, parking the results in appropriate places, then they're pulling on your energy. They're sucking basically wind out of your sails. And that was, I learned that from the very beginning when I had that experience and then started to work that with other people. So I knew that from that time forward, as I began to watch what were some of these techniques and also deciding the next actions about all those things that got out of your head. Those are two sort of critical core elements of the GTD process called externalize your stuff, decide next actions, because until you do that, you're not appropriately engaged. And so there's a part of that you make commitments, and then those commitments start running you as opposed to you being on top of them. Mm-hmm. And I started to experience that from the beginning of me beginning to experience these kind of things and how that affected everybody who did the same things. So, you know, it kind of early on, it was like, wow, this is really cool. And so I began to then build on that sort of with the same principles in mind about how do we really get everybody appropriately engaged with all their stuff. And, you know, it took a while to, you know, put all the pieces together and watch how it all came together.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about the pieces and how well they come together, what were the biggest obstacles you found on the way of documenting the GTD process?
Documenting it, meaning?
Book writing process and so on.
Oh, God, the book, writing the book was a...
I know, 15 years ago, issue. 16.
Yeah, serious project to try to pull all that together into that methodology. But again, I had done truly thousands of hours of trainings and seminars because, you know, first of all, I worked with individuals with doing this and watching what happened. And then I had the head of human resources for Lockheed back in 1983 saw what I was doing and said, wow, our whole culture needs this. Can you work with my organization development team to design some sort of a seminar or training program that applies what you've uncovered here so that a whole lot of people can get this as opposed to just one-on-one? And that was a pretty big milestone because then I'd never worked in the big corporate world, never been involved in big corporate training and development stuff. And so I worked with him and his team and came up with a format of, okay, how do I build this model into some sort of educational format? And that was really probably the initial framework of, okay, what's a sequential way to educate people about what this model is and what the core elements of it are, and then let them taste that and experience
more
it.
More like a structured, yeah?
Yeah, a structured way to understand what it was and to actually start to implement it.
Mm-hmm. How many people was there in this Lockheed Martin program being trained by you?
We did a pilot program in 1983, 1984 for 1,000 managers and executives.
That's crazy.
Basically. You know, it became so successful that they were going to try to do tests about, you know, and evaluate. And they said, God, we don't even need to, because everybody who went through the program said, I want all my staff to go through this next. Because once people get this, they go, God, everybody around me needs this. Mm. You know, you really sort of catch the universal value of keeping heads clear, keeping agreements clear, keeping track of your stuff, as opposed to using your head.
Yeah. You know,
your head's just a crappy office.
So honestly, what were your expectations regarding your first book? I mean, you know something that will be valuable for many, many people, possibly.
Yeah.
And the question was, okay, have you really expected such a success of GTD at that moment in year 2000?
Well, I had, you know, a very healthy way to approach life is high anticipation and no expectations.
Okay.
So that was pretty much where I was coming from. I said, you know, hey, it'd be nice if it became popular, but there were so many books out there and so much stuff was being done around time management and productivity. I had no idea how this would show up as anything unique to anybody, or that they would catch the subtlety or power of this, which I knew was there. So I didn't really have any idea. I basically just needed to get this stuff out of my head and get a manual out there in case I got run over by a bus. You know, somebody I figured would figure this out. But it took me that long to figure out that what I'd figured out was unique. Nobody else had figured that out, and that it was bulletproof. You couldn't punch a hole in this. While I was writing the book, I was, you know, working with one of the most challenging clients you would ever try to implement something in. And it went viral inside of that environment. So I said, well, if they can't punch a hole in it, I don't think anybody else on the planet can either. I can't name them, but they were, you know, one of the most well-known, sophisticated, you know, financial firms in the world. Yeah. So that just gave me the confidence to say, okay, let me put my 25 years of life work into a manual and then see what happens. Because I just needed to do that. I never had enough time to give everybody all the aspects of what this was and what it meant and how transformative it could be And so I just needed to get it out into a book form. It was also, you know, a good business decision called, hey, you know, if you're trying to scale what you do, I had a bunch of advisors tell me, hey, David, write a book. Oh, okay. Well, how do I do that? So I didn't, you know, writing is not my day job. So, you know, that was a big project to take on just to decide to do that. But, you know, so it's become, it's more bemusing in a way. It's kind of like, wow, it's interesting how it took off in a way and in a way it didn't, meaning it's for anyone, but not for everyone.
Exactly.
It's a very unique thing. So it's not like, you know, lose 40 pounds with no money down, you know, kind of a thing. It is something that actually takes cognitive horsepower and intention to actually make this work. We haven't found a profile of people who uptake on this, except that they're the people who need it the least. Mm-hmm. It's the most productive people, the most aspirational, entrepreneurial, you know, positively focused people who are so attracted to what it is that I uncovered, because it gives them more room to do what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the good explanation why people really use the GTD. Yeah, it was exactly the same with me. I mean, it's the way of being more productive, and you are looking for a ways to really just, you feel the roof is very, very close to you, and then you try to find a way to get over it.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, the current client that I'm working with, you know, who's a CEO of a unicorn, you know, he's got a startup that went from 33 million, you know, 6 years ago to a billion, you know, last year. And this guy, he's 47 years old, one of the brightest, sharpest people in the world. And he said, David, I feel like I'm just getting traction, but I'm up to here. There's no more room to do the cool things I think I could do now, given the success that he has. And that's why he's, you know, he engaged me for a year.
Yeah.
You know, to take this to a whole nother level.
I have one question. I'm wondering if you could explain the difference between efficiency and effectiveness from your point of view.
There is none.
Okay.
Because ultimately efficient, you know, why are you on the planet, Michael?
Good question.
Yeah. Well, if you have the answer to that, call how efficiently are you doing that? Mm-hmm. Right. So your effectiveness is going to be how efficiently you are fulfilling your purpose.
Okay.
So there's no difference. See, it's all efficiency, really. Effective toward what? Toward what end?
Exactly.
Right. And so if it's effective toward an end, that means it's efficient toward that end.
I have to think it over.
No, you don't. You got it. Right away.
David, you had very many professions in your life, and I'm wondering why have you changed your professions and positions so often? Is there any specific reason?
I was bored.
Okay, so we are...
I'm just bored. Well, that's what that was. That's
so
what...
we are lazy and bored.
I'm lazy and bored. You know, my hobbies last about 2.2 years. Okay. You know, I was into bonsai, I was into sailing, I was into karate, I was into the piano, I was into the guitar, I played Go, really got into playing Go and chess, and God, what else have I done, you know? But I just get into them to explore what they are. Once I find out what they are, I go, okay, what's next?
So we are searching, or you were
searching? Well, I was more... just curious,
okay,
and interested in exploring various things. Come on, no matter what you do, if all you're doing is being a chef, you're constantly exploring and curious within that range of things. It's my range was sort of, God, that's fascinating. Well, that's fascinating. I wonder how that works. And that's cool. Oh yeah, photography. That was another one. Drawing, by the way, painting. That's another one. So I liked sort of exploring all those different. Just for whatever reason, you know, just because they sort of rang my bell to do them. And professionally, you know, I couldn't seem to stay with any one particular industry or job or particular thing. My thing was really being an educator and a facilitator of improving people's lives. And so I got to combine those together by not just being a personal growth trainer or, you know, a minister or whatever. I could have done any of that.
Coach.
I guess. Or even a teacher in the traditional academics thing. I just became someone who loved to be able to show up and help you improve your life, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what you were doing. And what was great is I get to work with some of the brightest, sharpest, coolest people on the planet and walk into their universe and experience kind of their world. And, you know, it's fabulous. I get to hang with, you know, rock musicians and artists and TV producers and CEOs and students and physicians and whatever, and walk into their world and then be able to help them improve their condition. You know, what a great life. But I paid my dues. Took me a long time to get there.
Okay. You are being perceived as the father of well-organized life, you could say. You have your own methodology, you share the methodology. My question is, how well you are organizing your life? Do you have any, for example, routines, morning routines?
Yeah. First thing I do when I wake up is see how much longer I can sleep.
Really?
I look around and go, I can take another hour. And goodbye. No, I love sleep. I think sleep is one of the best things we can do. When I actually do get up, by the way, the night before, I always look at what's the hard landscape for the next day. Mm-hmm. What are the external commitments that I have that lets me know how long I can sleep?
Okay.
Right? So, you know, it's not just totally unconscious. So I look at that. And then first thing I do again when I get up is I squeeze a half a lemon and a glass of water and drink a, you know, lemon water. It helps cleanse the system. I've been doing that for 20 plus years. And then, you know, I make a wonderful, nice little pot of French press, great coffee, you know, and that my wife and I will share. And then I sit down and I just allow myself to relax, read the front page of the international version of the New York Times. I'll tend to snack around on Instagram and Facebook, just kind of see what's going on as my brain is kind of waking up, you know, there. And then I'll check again my calendar just to make sure my brain's okay. I may do a quick glance at email in case there are any sort of landmines or fabulous fun things or, you know, interesting thing I might want to see, knowing I'm going to get back and process that later on. But sometimes I just do an emergency scan. I just do a quick brief scan just to see what's coming toward me to the day so I feel comfortable, you know, really more about that. And then I do what I feel like doing.
Okay, so basically you do not have any fixed scenario for the day, for the rest of the day.
About the only thing I do consistently is wake up.
Yeah. Do you have any evening rituals?
I love good wine. So, yeah, whenever I can get some of that's fun to do. No, nothing particular. Well, other than I mentioned that I tend to look forward the next day or two,
yeah,
just to get a sense of sort of the context of the world that's coming toward me,
yeah,
and that I've committed to, so that I can sort of frame, you know, how I then use my time.
Mm-hmm. Are there any specific tools that helps you to stay productive? Do you use electronic tools or rather paper systems?
All of them. For GTD? Yeah. I use anything I can use. Well, there, you know, the GTD methodology has different phases to it.
Exactly.
So the capture phase, where you're grabbing ideas, to me is paper and pen. You know, there's nothing beats that. You know, it's with me virtually all the time because good ideas show up all the time.
Yeah.
So I've got a capture tool, and this is low tech. You know, it's a great, cool little pen and paper pad, and that's always there. So,
excuse me. Do you have any solution for shower time?
You know, Michael, if you actually captured all the ideas you had the first time you had them, you'd be surprised how few you have. I don't have ideas in the shower. I captured them all to begin with.
Most of the ideas really are coming to me when I'm taking my shower.
Yeah, well, that's fine. And believe me, I know there are people who actually have. If you go to a dive shop, you can actually get underwater writing equipment and they hang it in their shower so they can actually make notes in the shower. It's like, okay, fine. You know, that's great.
Okay, so the paper system for capture.
Paper, you know, usually that's low tech for the most part. I have one digital tool on my iPhone that I can record if I want to, and then it automatically sends that into my email. So, you know, those are what I use there. And then I use all kinds of, for my own reminder system, once I decide actions and projects and things I need to be reminded of that I can't finish in the moment, then I use a digital system for that. We use Lotus Notes in our company, so I use Lotus Notes. The tasks just function inside of Lotus Notes With a friend of mine designed a piece of software called eProductivity, which maps into Lotus Notes, which basically, you know, sort of facilitates a lot of the GTD process and into that. But, you know, basically any list manager would work. So, yeah, I use a digital tools for that. And I use, golly, Word and Excel and Snagit and the Personal Brain and Mind Manager. And, you know, those are just, they're constantly up. I'm using them for whatever reason. I need to add a thought to a project. I'll pull up a Mind Manager mind map and add it and then file it away. And, or, hey, there's something I need to, you know, grab and send to somebody. And so I'll just do a Snagit snapshot and then just send it off to them. So, you know, these are
a mix of the
big mix of tools. Yeah. It's still pretty labor intensive to figure out. There's no one tool that sort of integrates all of this. That's my vision of the future. And at some point that would be great to have a dashboard. So you don't have to, it'd be so, you have to still be pretty conscious of, okay, where do I put those kind of things? Which tool do I need to now do this kind of thinking? Which tool do I need right now to get this off my mind and so forth?
So what would be your suggestion to the people that have read your book and are looking for a specific solution or tool that might help them? Good luck.
Yeah. Okay. There, so, look, at last count, there were over 300 apps that had been built supposedly supporting the GTD process. Mm-hmm. You know, come on. So any list manager is all you need. There are a lot of tech people that are actually going back to paper planners now because they actually map to how your brain thinks much better than a lot of the digital tools do. But anything works, as long as you get it out of your head. Look at it as often as you need to look at it to keep it off your mind.
That's great. That's great. I'm wondering if you could move to your early 20s and if you could move in time, what would you
say? You're asking, that's 50 years ago, Michael.
Yeah, I know. But
you know, keep in mind,
if you could move back in time, what would you tell your younger self? What to focus on or what to, you know, avoid?
Pay attention to what you really feel like doing and take the risk to go for it.
Okay. Pay attention to what you are doing.
To what you really feel like doing.
Feel like doing and take a risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes
Start
sense.
Going for it. And don't hesitate. See, a lot of people and a lot of what I was doing was waiting to find the perfect thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of imperfect things, waiting for the perfect thing to do, not realizing, wait a minute, there is no really perfect thing to do. There's something that's directionally in the direction of what turns me on the most and what is fulfilling the most, and then start to pick something, things that are in that direction. So I think that's some advice actually I got, but that was advice I would give myself too.
You know, so stop chasing the rabbit. You probably won't catch it, but still you can move into this direction, right?
Sure. You know, I don't think, Michael, I've ever achieved a goal specifically that I set.
Really?
Yeah. See, goal setting is, there's some that you'd say, I decided to write a book and I did. But a lot of it was, let me hold this picture of what would be my fantasy of what would be really way cool. Let me start picking something that moves me in that direction. But as I start to move in that direction, guess what? Tomorrow, Michael, you and I are both going to be more mature than we are right now.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
We're going to be older. We're going to have more experience. You'll make a better decision about stuff potentially, assuming that you're not going downhill.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And then so, you know, I give myself permission to set that goal, start moving toward it. But I get halfway there and I go, oh, geez, that's cooler.
Yeah.
That's a cooler thing. See ya. Bye. I never got to that, but I would never have seen that other thing if I had not been moving toward that.
Exactly.
So using the future and using the illusion of the future as a way to stay positively engaged in some proactive, aspirational way in your life, I think is a great thing to do. So I don't suggest people set goals. I just say, hey, it's fun. Set one. See what happens. See how it changes how you might be feeling. And if you don't feel like it, don't do it. Some people should not set goals. They need to clean their toilet. No, come on. A lot of people think, I should do this thing. And their life is crap. You know, and they need to finish. They need to clean up their act so that they actually have a clear space, a much clearer space to actually think about those kind of things and be able to execute on them much more effectively.
Or remove all the dirt from your life.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Frankly, you know, one day, and I'll share with you, I had one of my big enlightenment moments was, you know, I was driving along the freeway and I realized I was agonizing about what should I do with my life? I don't know what to do. And this still small voice that we all have inside of me said, David, you have created so many things in this, not only this life, but in many others. You don't have to worry about what you need to create. Just handle what's in front of you with elegance and excellence and completion, and then let the next thing automatically emerge. And I haven't turned back from that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a matter of unfolding as opposed to producing more. God, everybody's so overwhelmed and has overcreated anyway. You don't need to create any more stuff. You just need to recognize what is moving inside of you, become more conscious about all that, and then clean it up, and then let this natural, creative, aspirational project or process emerge, because it will. That's who we are.
Yeah. It's more about listening to ourselves,
exactly.
Really.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the core. So I'm wondering, what's the future of GTD? I mean, looking from one point of view, it's so universal right now in its basic shape. Yeah. But I'm wondering, okay, will it be universal for the future? Or actually, I'm thinking, what's your point of view, not mine, but still, I'm looking for your opinion. What do you think? What is the future of GTD, or how it may evolve?
Well, the methodology itself won't change. Mm-hmm. You know, 100 years from now, when we land on Jupiter or something like that, we're still going to need an end basket. You're still going to need to capture things that are potentially relevant. You're still going to need to decide what's the next action on stuff. You're still going to have to focus on what are the things we're trying to complete about all of this. So, you know, come on, this is as universal as dirt is. So you're not going to change gravity. You know, it's a universal principle. And you're not going to change how your mind is built. I mean, everybody says the millennials are different people. No, they're not. It took 1 million years to design our brain. They're not going to change it in a generation. Give me a break. You know, your head's still a crappy office. So the fact is that having an external brain and being able to manage that appropriately, that's not going to change. That's going to, you know, keep increasing the need for that. You know, when I rewrote the book, Getting Things Done, in the new edition, one of the things I commented on was how now, as opposed to this is only for the high, you know, fast track professionals at some senior level, you know, professionally or business wise, this is for everybody. It's now at least 85% of the population. Anybody who's got a busy life, you know, needs to understand these, and these principles will be true forever. I think what's the only thing that's going to change is probably how this become just part of the install thought process. So our company has a 7-generation goal. So we're trying to scale this and to institutionalize it such that, you know, our kids just grow up thinking this way. Okay. And the world starts to think this way. I mean, my mission is that the world, you know, has no problems. It just has projects.
Have you taken any steps in this direction?
Yeah. Slowly. Because if you're trying to reach kids, you know, the next book, my CEO and a public school teacher are co-writing a book on GTD for the next generation, accumulating a lot of stories and case studies and so forth of parents and how they're using this for the, because I don't have kids, but they both do. And they, you know, we've done pilot programs for them. And so, you know, being able to reach essentially kids in the educational system. The educational system is still not teaching this thought process. You know, come on, they're just giving people information to try to get them to spit it back out, as opposed to what do I need to think about this information to be appropriately engaged with it?
How to filter it.
They're not teaching a thought process. And GTD is a thought process. It doesn't happen automatically. You're not born thinking outcome and action. You actually have to train yourself to think that way. You have to actually put cognitive horsepower to it. So it is something to train and learn, and it is a lifestyle art. It's the art form of how do you manage the flow of life's work. So it takes, you know, how long does it take to learn the flute? How long does it take to learn to parent? How long does it take to learn to cook spaghetti really well? I don't know. But these things are sort of infinite things, and GTD is that way too. So where it's going, I think, is where it's going to start to become much more embedded as an expected thought process. But, you know, it'll be taught. And we now have kids that are in their mid-20s that have been raised by parents who got GTD back 25 years ago when I was, you know, doing the early versions of this work, and homeschooled or whatever. But these kids are they can just name their own world because they just grew up thinking, of course, why would you ever keep anything in your head? Of course, you decide the next action on something when it first lands on your plate.
Yeah.
You know, and they already were taught these basic principles about how do you appropriately engage with your commitments.
That's great.
Yeah. So just more of that. But I, you know, I'm 70. So I, you know, at this point I go, it'll happen as soon as it happens. And, you know, whatever the heck, you know, I'm not that particularly aspirational or entrepreneurial in trying to get the world to buy into this. Because again, as I said, this is for anybody, but not for everybody. So I don't know how fast this is going to uptake. Most adults, you know, basically are trying to keep stuff in their head as a false sense of control. And that's a huge habit to change, just to get everything out of your head and to not keep anything in your head. And most people don't have a reference point about how cool their life could be and how to create that space where you could have nothing on your mind and still have a very busy life and have 100 plates spinning in the air all at the same time. It's possible.
Yeah. They are working all the time the same way, and they really don't know what it would be to work in the other way.
Well, the last thing a fish notices is water.
Yeah.
You know, the last thing people who have lived in that sort of constant angst about, gee, I should be doing, I don't know if I'm, what I'm doing is exactly what I ought to be doing, so let me work harder, whatever. And that most people have been in some version of that for so long, they don't know there's anything different. They don't even know they're in it.
They're trained to do the specific things,
really. Well, I've got the big marketing problem, because I solve a problem a lot of people don't know they have. You won't know it until you actually, it's kind of like you don't know how heavy gravity is.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's a huge pressure on your body right now, but you're not that aware of it unless you've ever been weightless.
Yeah.
Right. If you've ever been weightless, then you'll know how heavy gravity is. But most people don't even think about gravity.
Yeah.
Because they just are in it. So
it's natural for them.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So the last question is, you said that GTD is for, not for everybody, right?
Well, it's for anybody. Anybody can do it, but not everybody is going to uptake on this.
So who should not implement GTD?
Well, anybody who doesn't need to keep track of anything, you know, aside from what's currently in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So people in crisis mode, people in survival mode, people who truly have a life simple enough that they just let nature tell them what to do, you know, or, you know, it's obvious to them and they don't have any other aspirational things to try to think. Those folks wouldn't need this because actually they're using it, but they're letting life remind them. They're still using reminders. They just don't have a lot of complexity to it. Call, hey, I'm hungry. Let me eat. Well, that was a trigger. That was a reminder. Your kid's crying over there. Oh, there's something I might need to do about that. What do I need to do? So I don't think anybody gets away from the process, whether you need to be a bit more sophisticated, you know, about how you track that. You know, that's probably the question.
Yeah. So the last question, if someone would like to know more about you, the GTD methodology, where should they go? Where they can look for the information?
Rerun this blog.
Okay.
Or this podcast. In other words, just stay involved with this information. Obviously, my book, The New Edition of Getting Things Done, is worth the read. You can get that wherever you get books, and it's in, you know, 25, 30 languages now. So, you know, that's one way to do it. Gettingthingsdone.com is our website. A lot of paths and tracks to take, a lot of free information there as well. So those are ways to get involved.
Thank you very much, David.
My pleasure, Mike.
Thank you. How we can stay with GTD at the beginning? What's your best tips to stay, don't get discouraged or?
The weekly review.
Okay.
Building in a regular weekly
routine. Yeah.
Once a week, you need to block out at least 1 hour, two if you can, and use that as a way to catch up with your life. What are the things that have occurred over the last 7 days? Oh, God, that reminds me. Oh, yeah, they told me. Oh, yeah. And get that stuff out of your head and use that regularly so that you start to experience the sense of perspective that gives you, the sense of more relaxed focus control that gives you, so that you get used to that experience. And then that'll keep you coming back to, you know, okay, what do I need to do to it? So as soon as you can get more and more consistent experience with clarity and the freedom that this gives you and the sense of control and focus that it gives you, the more it will stick with you. So just keep coming back. Don't get discouraged if you fall. I fall off, you know, several times a day. No, come on. It's not about always being somewhat on. When you're on, you produce stuff that throws you off. So it's a constant, you know, sort of iteration of being creative and then catching up. So everybody catches up. At some point, you take a shower. At some point, you brush your teeth. At some point, you clean the kitchen. Right? At some point, you clean up your email, at least to whatever you feel comfortable with. You know, my comfort is zero. Some people's comfort is 4,000. You know, so getting more used to the smaller backlog that you have so that you're not... See, the more there's no backlog, the more I'm ready for surprise, spontaneity.
Yeah.
Hey, because something comes in here I didn't expect. Hey, David, want a party? Or David, here's an opportunity. Or do you want to spend time doing this? If I still have, you know, 1,000 or 200, you know, unprocessed emails back there, there's no way in God's green earth that I'm going to feel comfortable about how I'm going to address that. If that's all cleaned up, and it's close, right before I came in here to do this, you know, I got it down to 5. So I'm pretty available to whatever the heck shows up.
Yeah.
Right?
So you clean your inbox every day?
Not every day. But it usually doesn't go longer than about 24 to 48 hours before I, you know, get it down to that. You know, sometimes I just get on a roll and it piles up. But if that's your backlog, come on, you know, that's pretty squeaky clean. I'm not taking a shower right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I will within the next, you know, X hours, I will probably
do that.
Right. So, you know, there's always stuff coming in. But again, keeping that as clean and as current as you can keep it just makes it that much easier to be willing to be free and spontaneous and make good judgment calls about whether I should do that or not. I don't have time for that party because I got some other stuff, you know, that's really more pulling on me. But that's much easier to do with that backlog cleaned up.
Based on your experience with customers, what is the typical time of building a habit of working with GTD?
I mean, two years.
2 years, yeah? Okay, pretty long.
It takes 2 years to learn to cook spaghetti, 2 years to learn the banjo, 2 years to learn Italian, you know, a lot more than 2 years to learn how to be a parent. You know, so, you know, come on. So what's 2 years?
You know. Okay, that makes sense. Do we have any other questions?
How to convince your coworkers to use GTD?
Good luck. Good luck.
Perfect advice.
Yeah, good luck. No, I know. How do you... Well, see, it's not about GTD. It's about good practices.
Exactly.
Right? So just hold them accountable to good practices. It's hard to legislate system to anybody. You know, people ask me, gee, David, does your wife do GTD? I said, yeah, she's really great. She said, what's her system called? Beats me. We've been together 25 years. I've never even looked in her system in 25 years, ever. I have no idea what she does. I just know where her in-basket is. She knows where mine is.
She's accountable.
I hold her accountable to things she says she's going to do. She holds me accountable to things I'm going to do. Come on, life's like that. You know, so, you know, again, you can't legislate system, but you can certainly demonstrate these behaviors. And the cool thing about it is when you really start to do this, everyone you intersect with and all of your intersections will move up the food chain, mm-hmm. right? Because you're going to be much more accountable to what you say. You're going to be accountable to what they say.
Exactly.
Right? You're going to be accountable to follow up on what they say. And all of that starts to, you know, spread to some degree around you. People feel, everybody knows, everybody listening to this right now, knows that there are people you would not walk into their office without getting your act together. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they have their act together, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and everybody listening to this knows people that have no act together, so you can walk in and be as crazy as they are.
Yeah.
Right? Because you kind of take to people not what they need, but what they're putting out. So as you start to put this out, as you start to demonstrate this, it will affect a lot of people around you. And give them my book.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, that helps.